Sources with Steve Beck.
Sorry about that. As I was, I'm here, Casey. I'm here. Ace. Yeah, I'm trying to get a haircut appointment for next week, and you know, this is just the line. They're opening on Monday, and you know, the line's been busy here for 2 days. So, not happy. She says, "Oh, we can see you on Tuesday the 9th." No, not Tuesday the 9th. By Tuesday the 9th, I'm going to look like the wild man of Borneo. It's even with Tina's handiwork with the clipper. Tony Black standing by.
Hello.
Who's been cutting your hair, Tony?
Nobody. It looks like I'm a throwback to the 70s right now. It's over my ears. It's long as it's been in years. And I said that to somebody, and I said, man, this hair looks like it was in the 70s. They said, well, not really. He said, in the 70s, you had more of it. It wasn't gray. I said, oh, shut up. But I'm going to get a haircut, I think, tomorrow. I do have an appointment, but we'll see what she can do with it. It's a mess. Yeah, I'm in line right now in the car. I'm at the medicinal marijuana program outlet. Because my daughter's has use of medicinal marijuana, so for seizures and anxiety. But you should see this place, Steve. It's unbelievable. I got here an hour before it opened, and I'm like 20 or 30 in line of cars.
Wow!
But that's wow.
Oh, because they're doing drive through. It's being done via
you know what?
Drive through window kind of thing.
No, they just come and get you and let you pull up to the parking lot. Their only parking lot holds about 10 cars. And
oh, wow.
Then you can pull into the parking lot, and they come and get you out of the car. And there's a line of about 10 right now, so I'm the next, probably the next 10. But who knows? And it doesn't open until 10:30. It's 10:20, and I was here at 9:30, and I'm 20.
So. Wow.
A lot of drug users out there. I tell you what, it's amazing how this medicinal marijuana has been so popular. I hope they're using it for medicinal purposes, as I am with my daughter. It makes you wonder sometimes, is it all medicinal or is it just recreational? You don't know. But
well,
that's a whole other subject.
Well, give her the gummies? Does she take the gummies? Is that the...
They've got so many, you should see the brands and what they call them. I mean, it's really ridiculous. But we use the oil, two different oils, for seizures and anxiety. And you should just ingest it or you put it under her tongue, whatever she lets me do. But it works. It does help her settle down, and the seizures have been, okay. And we also use other seizure medication. I wouldn't depend on it just for the seizures, but it really helps with the anxiety. I guess you noticed some of my Facebook posts and where I was out at the track the other day, last Thursday. I guess it was last Thursday, a week ago. And I had my one-man rally. I was dressed in my jockey outfit, silks, helmet, mask, goggles, and I was on Street Road in front of Park's Racetrack. And you believe me, Steve, it was amazing how many people would go past. I had two signs. One said, let's go racing, save our jobs, and the other is back, the sign that I had, one in front and one in the back, you know, like an old sign carrier, the way they used to advertise things, and the one in the back said, support horse racing and agriculture, save our jobs, and you would be surprised how many people either slowed down, beeped, stopped, come and ask questions, took pictures, and, you know, I just hope they get this thing straightened out. I saw where Governor Wolf said June 5th he was going to allow some sports to operate and athletes to practice and sports to operate at stadiums with no live audience. Well, the last time I looked, horse racing was a sport, a highly physical activity between two athletes, jockeys and horses. And we, if not considered a sport, I don't know what we are considered. We're entertainment, we're athletic, we're sports, and we're a legal gambling entity, a legal gambling entity. It's just amazing how people try not to categorize horse racing as an athletic event. It certainly is. I mean, we perform not at a stadium, but at a racetrack. That's our stadium. And we certainly can perform without a live audience. And we certainly can, you know, adhere to all the rules that have been put forth, you know, the social distancing and masks and everything else. You know, maybe the horses won't know everything about social distancing. I rode some that were social distancing from the rear and some that were social distancing from the front. But I hope they can make some headway in the next day or two where we would go be able to go back to racing. I know a lot of it has to do with also what the track owners want to do. And at times, you know, you see the track owners, if they're the same entity as the casino owner, it seems like the track is the redheaded stepchild that takes a back seat. And I hope that's not the case with Greenwood Racing and the being the casino operator and the track owner. I hope we can make some headway in the next few days to where they'll let these horsemen start competing. And I'm going to tell you what, it's a financial hardship. I mean, nobody could prepare for this. And it's not something you could prepare for a shutdown like this, you know, that was a surprise to everybody, this whole thing, the COVID-19. I mean, how can you prepare for things that you don't even know they're going to occur? So I hope we make some headway, and I hope we're considered a sports come June 5th, so we can start operating also.
Well, and you know, each of the three thoroughbred facilities in Pennsylvania, and of course the harness tracks, they're all in this essentially together. And even though there, you know, some of the missives and you know, the inquiries and the negotiations with Harrisburg and so on and so forth, you know, is coming from, you know, a few different entities, but it's been, you know, it's been a little maddening, feeling as if they, you know, they're being stonewalled. And then to, you know, to watch the rest of the region, one domino after another fall and get started, not, and as you just heard from Tim Keefe, I mean, Pennsylvania horsemen won't be able to run at Laurel right away. I mean, it's going to be confined to, you know, the community of Maryland-based runners and outfits. So it's not a, you know, there's not immediate relief in sight until there's an okay to, you know, to set a date. And I know guys want to get, yeah.
That's so understandable. You know, I can understand why they would do that for safety and health reasons. And also, you know, the people that stay there and have suffered through this thing should have the opportunity to run first. And that, one thing about Maryland, they do it right. I didn't hear your last the last conversation that you had. But one thing about Maryland, they do it right. And even if it was by accident, it's my hat's off to them that the casinos and the track owners are two separate entities, and they both put on the best show they can possibly put on. And it's almost as if, you know, in the future, if there is casino bills that go forward, gaming bills that go forward, you almost want to make sure that the owner of the casino and the owner of the racetracks are separate entities, because it just seems like the track, once they get the casino, the track becomes the redheaded stepchild and has to, you know, get whatever they might be given by the casino operator. I guess casinos are more profitable and easier to operate than a racetrack.
Well, sure.
But it looks to me, most of the time, these casino and gaming bills get passed, they ride in on the horses' backs. You know, a lot of them would never have come to fruition if they wasn't already horse racing in that particular state. But, you know, I don't know. We'll see what happens. And I just hope that we're considered an athletic event as we should be and a sport as we should be considered. And, you know, the only thing, Governor Wolf kind of tipped his hand before this all hit with the pandemic, when he was trying to access some of the funding that gaming contributes to racetracks, and he was trying to pass a bill to reallocate that funding. So maybe he's not an absolute fan of racing and wants to reallocate the gaming money that goes to racing. But we're here. We need it. We're an industry that does more than just entertain. I mean, when you talk about horse racing also supports agriculture. I mean, where do you think these horses are raised? In daycare centers? No, they're raised on farms. Yeah. Pennsylvania breeding is a big industry also. Who do you think feeds these horses? Farmers feed these horses. Where do you think hay, oats, and straw is raised? It doesn't get bought out of a grocery store. It has to be grown. So we support agriculture and create more than just jobs at the racetrack, you know, which there's jobs on the front side, the back side, you know, and bartenders and waitresses and all the jobs that are on the front side and all the jobs that are on the back side. We support agriculture. Agriculture employs a lot of people. We're a big employment industry and should be treated as so. You know, Maybe we need more rallies. My one-man rally was fun. I enjoyed it, and I like putting on my boots and my colors and my jockey clothes. I had my helmet, I had my goggles on, and I had my face mask. So I enjoyed it, and I hope a few people that went past just said, look at this nut. He's out there. A one-man rally, but you know, you never know. Maybe it didn't affect anything in a positive way, but it certainly didn't affect anything in a negative way.
No. It's a good message.
Let's see what happens.
Yeah. Well, it's a good. If it got some attention and it got circulated on social media, etc. Tony, have you talked? How many jocks have you been in contact with? And how are, you know, how have they managed to get through? I mean, are some of the guys from the afternoons, they riding, they getting on horses in the mornings for a little stipend, for a little, $10 a horse?
They're getting on horses in the morning with their face masks on and even their goggles down. And they're staying fit. So are the horses. I have talked to a bunch of them initially when this thing all hit and then that CARE Act was passed. I wanted to let them know that jockeys were eligible for the first time that I can ever realize, for as independent contractors for unemployment. So that was relief to a lot of them. It was very hard to apply for unemployment. A lot of them didn't even know they were eligible, but it was because of that CARE Relief Act. It made independent contractors eligible for unemployment, and that's what jockeys are, independent contractors. Connie Yeoman, who is the secretary for the PTHA, was the first one to make me aware of that. So my hat's off to Connie Yeoman, because I never knew we were going to, well, not me, but jockeys were going to be eligible for unemployment. And I did make sure I passed the word around when I initially found out. A lot of the jocks said, though, as every other person tells you, is to apply for unemployment was a long process and you better have patience. But a lot of them got it done.
I'm glad to hear that, and we had touched on that in those conversations we had with the consultants, with NTRA's consultant about who was going to be eligible, and with the two waves of offerings from the government, and in fact, we just heard the other day that quite a few horsemen were ultimately successful after, you know, after getting turned away in the, particularly in the first round. But I, you know, the Jocks having, you know, having their opportunity, that's good. Yeah, based on that list that I went through, things are, you know, by mid June, we're pretty much, you know, we'll be up to, well, it looks like about 15, maybe 17, 18 venues. So, pretty much other than Pennsylvania right now and Arlington, that, you know, doesn't seem to have a clear path. Everything will get going, some late, later than others. And I see a little news bit this morning already, regarding Del Mar, and Del Mar is going to ask the CHRB, at their June 11th meeting, they're going to ask if they can push up the start of the meet and run 3 days a week. So we'll have to get, they're looking to run 10 race cards Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and 11 race cards, or actually Fridays and Sundays, 11 race cards on Saturdays, and, you know, through Labor Day. And from Tom Robbins, we want to begin the meet earlier and offer horsemen the same number of opportunities. And with the San Diego Fair canceled, they'll have the ability to get started sooner. And so the start date would now move up to July, move up about a week and a half, move up to July 10th for Del Mar. And Los Al wraps up July 5th. So instead of waiting about 2 weeks, they would spin back, you know, relatively quickly by the Friday. So there's a little tidbit. Maybe we'll get a hold of Tom or David Jerkins and get some more. But you'll see that later today. Well, Tony, I just put out that picture that great picture of you that I found years ago at a few years ago at Pimlico, and you're going to have to re-identify the three jocks in the picture with you. But I wanted everybody to see you, you know, with a full head of black hair. So
yeah, it certainly isn't that way anymore. But I haven't seen this picture. I'm in the car now. Get it. I can't wait to see it. Maybe it's for Cali.
I'll send it here. I'll send it to you right now.
I bet you one of them's Vince for Cali. But I'm going to identify him when you send it to me, and I get a chance to look at it. But Pimlico, I wonder what year was it? Wasn't 1973? Was it?
It's well, you tell me. Yeah, I think you look like you're in your say 27, 28, give or take. I'd say late 70s.
All right.
Maybe 80.
I really love Merlin Racing, and I'm always rooting for those guys down there, and I was just an honor to be a part of it for many years. Even was the first meet I ever went to was Laurel. I left Garden State, lost the bug, and went into Laurel with nothing and wound up leading rider of the meet. And Vince Pacalli and I were living together, and by the end of that meet, he was getting married, and I was best man. So a lot of memories go back to Merlin Racing. I loved Laurel, Bowie, Pimlico. Bowie was a great place to race in the wintertime. Laurel was always good, and then we'd go to Pimlico. But it was an enjoyable time of my life and great memories. I'm going to look at it. I'll let you know who they are, Steve.
You got to tell me. I think there's one. I've shown it to you a few years ago, and I just can't remember. And whenever I pull these out, people go crazy. They just love, you know, it because it's a moment in time, and it just it's special from that, you know, from that standpoint. And that picture I sent you that we laughed about with.
Oh, yeah, what was that?
It was George Cusimano.
June, that was his wife at the time, and before he got killed. She said that was one of my favorite pictures with him and
Paul Lynn.
Paul Lynn. I couldn't think of the name.
Yep.
Yeah, yep. I contacted her, and she said, yeah, that's him. And that was one of my favorite pictures of him in Fall Lynn. A lot of memories with Cusimano. First meet, I went to Laurel to ride. Cusimano fell, broke his collarbone, and Delp picked me up, and that's why I was lean rider at that meet. And I used to ride a horse called Pro Bitter for Buddy Delp, and he was a runner and won a bunch of races on him. And it was because of George's broken collarbone that I got a chance to ride for Delp, you know, Buddy Delp, and wound up doing nothing but good after I lost the bug. At the first meet, I left Jersey in Pennsylvania, and that was Laurel. Leading rider, and I've got they awarded me, and this is a difference in time. Why would you give, at the time, 1970, whatever it was, 72, they gave me a beautiful engraved silver cigarette box lined in some type of cedar wood, and it was, and in this day and age, you wouldn't give an athlete a cigarette box. You know, it was beautiful.
I'll find
you a picture of it one day. But that was beautiful silver. I mean, silver.
That's correct.
Gray, and it was a cigarette box, and it was lined in some kind of wood that was supposed to keep the cigarettes or cigar boxes, cigarettes fresh.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
But times have changed. You know, I can remember coming out of the hot box, and the first thing the doc would do was light up a cigarette in the massage table. You wouldn't do that in this day and age, would you?
No, those days are long. Those days are long gone. Tony, and also, before we go, we didn't talk after we have not. Have we talked on air some John Mazza appreciation from you?
No, and I wrote for John, and I wrote for his son Joey, and they were fixtures. They're fixtures. They were fixtures in the New Jersey circuit, and a guy that was great to ride for. He never complained. You know, he didn't win a lot of races for him, but he certainly made his mark in racing in Jersey. And you know, it's sad as we think of back to all the people that we rode for, and so many of the good horsemen, you know, took care of their horses, loved their horses. And always ran a quality outfit. You know, it was always taking care of the horses was their prime objective. And John was a typical trainer of that era, a good horseman, and brought up a son to be a good horseman. And his son has had his health battles with cancer. And, you know, one thing about it, it's a strong family. They stuck together, and John was a great influence on a lot of people in racing. Always had kids under the barn, you know, positive influence, would teach them. You know, never was a hard guy to get along with. And I can attest to that because not everybody got along with me, and he did. But, you know, sometimes I have a little bit too much to say about horses, and he was good to deal with. But, you know, he was mainly Jersey, and I'd go to Pennsylvania, but we, our paths would always cross, and if he shipped something in the PA, he would usually look to see if I was there first. Good horseman, and that's a good family man. What else can you ask for in life?
Yeah. Well, there was really a outpouring, sweet outpouring of appreciation for John, and I was so happy that, you know, I had to, got that chance to have him on last year when Horologist went on her run. Really nice. And I actually, Bobby Colina, I should mention Bobby Colina, who I should have thought to include, wrote me a really nice note, and he talked about his, you know, essentially kind of grew up like a brother, you know, working for Bobby's father and you know, and then John going out on his own. Yeah, Joe Colina.
I love the most.
Tony, this was tremendous.
Always a pleasure, Steve. And we appreciate all the positives that you put out there for people to hear. And let's just get racing and this through this situation and all sticking together and, you know, and let's get horse racing and give these horsemen some relief, get them able to earn some money. They're struggling back there, and you know, the expenses go on. And we just need to get racing, of course, done in a healthy way, back on track.
Sure. Well, we're inching forward. We're getting closer almost everywhere. Pull up that picture on I just sent you the message. I sent you the photo, right. and let me know who those guys are so I can write it. I can put it on Tony Black, everybody, and we'll catch up next week. I'll be calling you from Belmont, Tony, actually. So that'll be
right.
I'm looking forward to that. All right.
You enjoy and take care. Love you, brother.
Love you. Tony Black, everybody. The one and only. We'll stay right here, and we'll go a couple of miles up the road from Tony to Hamilton Square. And Steve Haskin, who's standing by. Steve, good morning.
Good morning. I'm actually sitting by. I don't do much standing.
That's fine, too. Well, we were looking forward, as always, to some recapping. And Maxfield comes back, Steve. We talked heading into the Matt Wynn and the resumption of the road to the Derby, the twisting, the long and winding road to the September Derby. Some thoughts about Saturday. Pretty nice performance.
Coming off his that long of a layoff, I don't think he could have gotten any more out of his first start back than he did. I mean, I thought he looked absolutely spectacular before the race, looking at him in the post-parade, and sadly, I mean, he has grown into one big, gorgeous racehorse. So, I mean, he holds himself with a lot of class, and I just thought he looked great. And I figured, well, if he runs to the way he looks, then I don't know what we're going to get. Now, we didn't get that electrifying burst of speed that we got in the Breeders' Futurity, but I think we got a lot more in some ways, because obviously he was fresh and he had been working well. And even though the chart shows that he was eighth, he was only like 2 to 3 lengths off the pace. So, I mean, it shows a lot of adaptability that he can run close to the pace. And he was, he was in touch most of the way. And, granted, part of that had to do with the slow pace. But, he just sat, and he was in traffic, and he had to extricate himself. And then when it came time to run, he fanned away. He was wide on both turns. He was 4, maybe 5 wide in the first turn, and probably at least 5 wide on the second turn. And he didn't have the smoothest of stretch runs. I think what happened is if you look at it, you'll see that the jock on New York Traffic, hit his horse left-handed, and he started coming out. But before that, Ortiz was hitting Maxfield left-handed, and he was shying from it. He kept drifting out, and he kept hitting him left-handed. And the more he hit him, the more he drifted out. So it might have looked a little awkward, on the pan shot. And then after that, when he stopped whipping him, the New York Traffic came out and sort of intimidated him. And when he came right out into his path, and he went out even farther to avoid him. So it wasn't, it wasn't the greatest stretch run visually. But once he straightened out in the last 16th, and he was in very close quarters with New York Traffic. In fact, at one point, I couldn't even tell what was going on, but if you watch it, it looked like, I don't know if Ortiz got his whip tangled, with the other rider, but he just sort of reached out at some point. It almost looked like, it looked like the battling, the battling derby that time, or the Yakaza and Ratsa derby, Preakness. But I don't know what was going on, but it was the weirdest thing. And it looked like he might have gotten his whip stuck somewhere, but he actually reached out with his left hand and almost halfway across the saddle of New York Traffic. So it was kind of weird. But as far as Maxfield goes, he straightened himself out. He was striding out, beautifully. And, right before the wire, he pricked his ears, which I always love to see. He knew it was done. And then after the wire, Ortiz automatically just took him to the outside fence and had him pull up. It was obviously that obviously that Brendan Walsh didn't want him doing too much or galloping out too far, or he must have told him to take him, because he just steered him right to the outside fence and pulled him up, which was fine. But with all that, what I found impressive, and I know the pace was slow, but he was closer to the pace. But he came home in 23.4 and 6.1. I don't care, slow pace or not. You come home that fast, that's legitimate. I mean, that's to come back from that, you know, that far. What was it, 8 months or so, 8.5 months? And then he winds up getting a one on Thoroughgraph. I said, wow. I mean, you can't, you know, obviously because he went wide the whole way. And so you can't fault the race in any way. I mean, it was a great learning experience, and it, you know, showed that he's back, and from his physical appearance, he's going to be a major force. He's got the pedigree, and he's got the looks. We know he's got the turn of foot. We saw it last year, and now we know he can run in traffic and still come home. So I was very impressed.
How do you think they proceed? I don't know if you heard Brendan with me on Monday, but this is an interesting, you know, next step discussion.
I tell you, well, you know, I wrote a whole column on that. I think the decision is going to be a very, very important decision, because we're going to find out about the Belmont Stakes through their eyes. And so we should get an indication of maybe how horsemen in general are going to look at the Belmont Stakes after the fact, after Godolphin and Brendan Walsh make their decision. You know, I mean, listen, the horses run three times, and if they truly look at the Belmont as a classic, I mean, I don't know how people, you know, well, you know, a lot of people saying there is no Triple Crown this year. You know, in many ways, there isn't. There is no Triple Crown, or there's a Triple Crown with an asterisk. Depends on how you look at it. But if they truly look at the Belmont as a classic, then you would think that they would want to run, because, you know, nobody passes up a classic race if you're looking at it as a classic and being featured. You got a 3-hour NBC telecast, and you have one of the favorites in the race. So if they look at it as a classic, they're going to say, well, you know, it's a big race. We can get national exposure. We'll go down as a Belmont Stakes winner. But if they don't, and they decide to wait 3 weeks and run in the Bluegrass Stakes on a track that Maxfield obviously relished when he won the Breeders' Futurity the way he did last fall, so does that mean that they regard the Belmont as just another big race and not a true classic? Because, like I said, if they regard it as a classic, then you have to run. But if you don't, you know, and especially the fact that it's the first classic. So by giving it up, you lose any chance of being a, quote, asterisk Triple Crown winner, if there is such a thing. But you're giving up that chance. Now, looking at it logically, if they don't look at the Belmont as a classic, then the logical step is the Bluegrass Stakes. Like I said, it's 3 weeks later. He's already won over the track. That would give them 4 weeks to the Travers, assuming it's going to be run on August 8th. Then 4 weeks to the Kentucky Derby. Then 4 weeks to the Preakness. I mean, the timing is perfect to run in the Bluegrass and not subject them. Because, listen, yeah, he didn't beat the greatest field. He beat some really nice horses, but certainly not the best field. Now, in the second start, you want him to run against Tislelore and the Dowell and Solo Volante, you know, and some really good horses. So I think the decision is going to be very important. Because, look, after they run the Derby, they could very easily, he's already shown that he could run well fresh, they could go straight into the Breeders' Cup Classic from there. And not even bother with the Preakness if they don't want to. Now, if Naira somehow schedules the Travers for August 1st, to be 5 weeks out from the Derby, then it might be coming back too quickly off the bluegrass, and that would make the Belmont more feasible. But I would think the Belmont, I would think the Travers would be run on August 8th. Another thing with the Travers, by the way, is that, you know, I mean, listen, I don't know what their thinking is there. But the big question is, are they going to keep it at a mile and a quarter or run it at a mile and an eighth? And if they run it at a mile and an eighth, to me, the Travers is going to be to the Derby what the Jim Dandy is to the Travers.
Sure.
I mean, I just don't like that race. I mean, there's no reason at all not to run it at a mile and a quarter. I think it would be a monumental mistake. You know, if their thinking is that by asking a horse to run back-to-back mile and a quarter races is too tough, it's ridiculous. It's not nearly as tough as a younger, less mature three-year-old running a mile and a quarter and then coming back 2 weeks and running it a mile and three-sixteenths and then coming back 3 weeks later and running it a mile and a half.
Right.
And that's on the first Saturday
right.
in June. Hey, you're starting off in the first week in August. You know, I mean, these are going to be much stronger and more mature three-year-olds with a lot more bottom under them. So, and also, you know, if you keep the Travers at a mile and a quarter, you know, it keeps the long tradition of the race and makes it more attractive because the only change would be the date. So let's say a horse should win the Travers and then get beat in the makeshift Derby. Chances are he would have lost the Derby anyway, but at least he's a real, and I emphasize real, Travers winner with no asterisks involved. One of the few races that there are no asterisks. So they still maintain the integrity of the race. And, you know, to win the Travers in August at a mile and a quarter would still be pretty prestigious in its own right. So I think they would make a – this actually – I can't think of a reason why they would not run it a mile and a quarter. You know, and then some, you know, a lot of things NYRA does now is that they'll say, well, we asked the trainers and they don't run it a mile and a quarter. If that's the case, by the way, then that says a lot about the state of racing in this country and the way trainers and owners look at their horses. I mean, you're already bowing to Churchill Downs. You're changing the date to a less advantageous spot on the calendar. So why lower yourself by changing the distance of one of the most historic and prestigious races in the country and have to add an asterisk to it? You know, and trainers just have to get it into their heads that running in the 10-furlong Travers and coming back in a Derby in 4 weeks is a lot easier than the traditional Derby Preakness Double. And like I said, you know, the difference is only 1/16 of a mile. And like I said before, you're dealing with tougher, stronger, and more mature three-year-olds in August and September than you are in early to mid-May. So I would be very disappointed in NYRA if they made that a mile and eighth. It wouldn't be the Travers. That's just my opinion.
It would seem that, you know, that having the opportunity to run a mile and a quarter on that timing and with all the other July opportunities and June opportunities that are taking shape, it would feel like a lot of horses would be ready. And you know, there's no shortage. Let's not pretend that there isn't a group of horses out there that the trainers have been waiting and they know that, you know, they're going to be, you know, ideal for longer distance, and they're crying out for, you know, for an authentic route of ground. So I think that having, you know, a Travers Derby Preakness sequence, there's something, you know, there's something there. I mean, and wouldn't that be a marketable entity? I mean, to tie, you know, the Travers Derby and Preakness together in some, you know, makeshift three-year-old entity?
Yeah, I definitely think so. And not only that, but, I mean, how about a Travers Kentucky Derby double within a month of each other? That is never, ever going to happen again in the history of horse racing. To be able to say I won the Travers and the Kentucky Derby within a month span.
No.
You know, and like I said, you come back in the Preakness, and the Preakness, then to shorten up at a mile and 3/16, that's fine, because you shorten up a little bit, and it'll be
sure.
prep for the Breeders' Cup Classic to go back. Plus, you have to look at the horses that you're dealing with. If you have a horse like Maxfield, or Sol Volante, or even Tis the Law, you know, who's got the pedigree, I mean, do you want to keep running at a mile and an eighth? I mean, it's time to run a mile and a quarter. You normally would be running it in the first Saturday in May. Now you're talking about the first Saturday in August. So a lot of these horses want a mile and a quarter.
To yeah,
a horse like
agreed.
Maxfield would be, you know, at a disadvantage running at a mile and an eighth. Because, you know, you've got horses like Nadal, and, you know, we'll see what that Bradford does with Charlotte now. Now, you know, it sounds like he wants to run into Woody Stevens and then go into Haskell, which is fine. I mean, if you look at his pedigree and his style of running, you know, maybe Bradford, in his own way, is not looking at him as a classic horse. Now, if he wins the Haskell, he'll obviously go in the Derby, but he wants to avoid running, you know, both horses. And then he has to figure out what to do with Authentic. So he's got three horses, like I said last week. He's got three horses with the same running style. So I think he's just basically trying to, you know, break them up. Now, and if you're choosing, if you're Maxfield and you're choosing between the Belmont and the Bluegrass, and you look at the Belmont, it's, all right, you know, it's got the name Belmont, but it's going to have a huge asterisk next to it. And it's a mile and an eighth. I don't know of any classic in the world that's run at a mile and an eighth. So let's say you're running it, by the way. Do you really want to run against Nadal going one turn at a mile and an eighth on a track that's usually extremely speed-favoring, where deep closers, if he does come up from out of it, are always at a disadvantage? You know, you go around that big turn, and you see how many times you see horses making a big move, and then they came up empty in the stretch. You don't see too many horses coming from way out of it at Belmont. And when that track is speed favoring, I mean, that track would be set up perfectly for Nadal, who could either go to the front or just sit right off a horse. And he would be very tough going one turn. Or do you want to go, you know, not subject a horse to that? And Tis the Law, who would be sitting right behind him. So you'd have to catch both of those horses. So although I'd love to see him in the Belmont, and make it a bit, especially with Charlotte and out of the race, if I had the horse, to tell you the truth, I'd go into Bluegrass. It just seems like, listen, there'll be good horses. There's going to be good horses no matter where you run. There's just too many horses around right now. But, you know, and then we'll have to see what happens after the Sandy Derby. And, you know, it's time for those horses to come east. We'll see what happens, how Honor AP and Authentic run in that race. And then there's a lot of up-and-comers. You know, Godolphin doesn't have. They got another horse named Mr. Guide, who was supposed to run on June 4th
right.
in an allowance race. And, you know, if he wins that race, he's going to be ready for a major stakes. He's got a lot of talent, that horse. And Mark Henning's got this horse, Sonoman, who I like a lot. There's going to be some up and coming horses that are going to be running soon and moving up in class, and we'll see how good they are. We saw one of them already in Pneumatic, who a lot of people might have been disappointed in his race, but you really can't, because he wound up on the rail. When he broke his maiden, he came from fifth. He came from like five, six lengths off the pace, and I just loved the way he cornered and the athleticism he showed. Here, he breaks from the rail, he goes to the front, and he's battling head-to-head with two horses. Then after he puts one of them away, Then he's battling with New York Traffic, who's a much more experienced, seasoned horse than he is. And he goes head-to-head with him, and he hung in there. I mean, he finished third. It was, you know, it wasn't a great race, but it wasn't a bad race. I want to see what he does going back to the style of running that he likes. He doesn't want to. I don't think he wants to run that way. He's a horse that comes from off the pace. He got stuck on the lead, so give him another chance. New York Traffic is always right there. He always runs hard. So, I mean, every one of these races is going to be tough. But I would go Bluegrass with Maxfield. I'm not a fan of a mile and eighth at Belmont under those conditions. You've already been a mile and a quarter. I mean, a mile and eighth, two turns. And now you got a mile and 16th, I should say. to go from two turns back to one turn on that speed favoring track, to me, is not conducive to that horse's running style. It's my opinion.
No, I hear you. It's going to be tough, and I could tell. It's funny because between that conversation with Brendan Monday, and then with Brad Cox having been on last week, I thought to reach out to Jim Rupp and had Jim Rupp on. And of course, this is a different topic, but it's a similar quandary, which is stay at home and run in the Grade Two Stephen Foster, or come to New York. This is with Owendale. Come
right.
to New York and run in the Met Mile, and enhance greatly your resume.
He can't go from that far back in the Met Mile.
Maybe not that far back, but he certainly would get pace to close into.
He's bred for a mile, really, more than he is, for a mile and 16th, and he already showed that. He really showed he could. Obviously, he just showed he could win at a mile. Actually, I thought I don't go by Beyer too much, but I didn't think the Beyer numbers for that race and the Matt Wynn would be as close as they were. I thought he'd get a triple digit Beyer, but you got to give him credit. I mean, to come from that far back. I agree with you. I think the Met Mile would be a good spot for him.
Yeah, he just, not that there's anything wrong with the Foster, but you can always look, down the road and, you can try the Clark again, which has got the grade one. I mean, I would focus, being with that pedigree, I think you got to focus on getting a grade one for him. That's, will make all the difference.
Grade ones are going to be tough to come by. I mean, obviously, it'll be a lot of good horses in the Met Mile, but I don't think it's going to be any. I can't think of any true mile superstars. That a true mile is out there. It'll be a tough competitive race, like it always is. I think a lot of these older horses, and there's a lot of strong ones, I think they're pretty much very close together.
Now, Steve, you mentioned the Santa Anita Derby that is our next opportunity, and we did get a name. Michael McCarthy added Rushy to what is essentially being billed
He's a nice horse. I figured they would run him.
I don't know if you saw this morning already. I noticed yesterday the workout. I don't know if you saw the XBTV vid of Honor AP's work, and
I watched the work. I watched the work on XBTV.
Unbelievable! I mean, the rider is literally standing up in the irons. He's got the feet on the dashboard, as they say, and doing everything he can to restrain Honor AP from just. He just is so anxious to run, and I think you'll appreciate the tagline I put on it. And I retweeted it, and I said, "Kaleidoscopio, is that you?" because we got so used to Kaleidoscopio going around, 2 minute licking with the guy standing straight up that way,
right.
And it was the first thing that popped in my head is how similar it was. It looked to me to. the Argentinian runoff.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, Kaleidoscopio, I mean, his marathon was one of the most exciting races I've seen in a long time. I mean, that was an incredible race. But yeah, I mean, it's typical, John Sheriffs. Yeah, I don't think he wants to do too much with him because he's had such a long series of workouts, and. I just think he's going to be this horse is loaded for bear. I mean, this horse is really ready. He's dying to run, and if you want, watch his workouts compared to the workouts a few months ago. He's much more refined now. He's a big, hulking, muscular horse. And he doesn't exactly float over the ground. And he's got an unusual stride. You know, he doesn't really get down and reach out far, but he's got a good rhythm to it. It's just an unusual stride. But John Sheriff had sent me a video of him working. This was probably about a month ago. From the jockey cam on the helmet cam. And boy, you could feel the power of that horse. You can almost feel it just watching it, watching him every step of the way. But listen, we have no idea how good this horse is. I mean, I thought his last race was extremely good, all things considered, and who he was running against. So I don't know what to expect from him. But boy, he has been really working well. He's just getting more and more powerful. And more athletic. He's not the lumbering horse that he saw a few months ago. I think he's getting fine tuned. I think a few months ago he was a Hummer limousine. Now he's more of the Ferrari type. We'll see what he does. Listen, if Authentic's the only speed in the race again, he's going to be at a disadvantage again. And if he runs, if he runs second, he runs a good second. It's not the end of the world, but I'm sure he wants to win a Grade One with him. But we'll see what the tactics are. I wouldn't be surprised to see him run closer this time, and just stalk him and just run with him, because I don't know who else to be afraid of. I mean, you can't really be afraid of Rushy. I think Rushy is a good horse based on his last start, but he doesn't have a lot of experience. And we'll see who else shows up in there. If Tiz the Magician shows up, or I don't know who else is even out there. But
Tiz the Magician's on the sidelines. He's on the sidelines. Tiz the Magician is sidelined. He's getting a freshening. We talked to Mandela. Shooters Shoot, Jay mentioned yesterday.
I saw Shooters Shoot's run. Well, there's your speed right there. So
yeah,
and it's not only is he fast, but he's very, very game. And listen, it's always good to see you always want to see either a celebrity or a sports star do well. So Eric Johnson has really gotten into the game big time. So it would be nice to see him run. And his last start was about as game as you could get. He looked totally beaten after setting the fast fractions, and he just would not relinquish that lead at all. And we don't know how good he is. But if he goes to the front, we'll see if Authentic can rate off of him. And Honoré P will be sitting right behind both of them. Because I think Sheriff's is going to make sure he gets into the race. It's not going to be dependent on pace or let anybody get out there too much. Not the way he's been working. So it should be interesting. Sandy Derby should be an interesting race. And I'm glad Shooty Shoot. I don't want to see Authentic go out there and just gallop, all by himself again on an easy lead. You can win a Grade One from their standpoint, but from a fan standpoint, you don't want to see that. It's just too easy. You want to see a competitive race. You want to see what these horses are made of, and not just go out there and have one easy race after another, which Charlton has had. We have no idea how good or great Charlton is. I mean, he may be a superstar, but obviously, for him to now run in the Woody Stevens, it's obviously that Baffert is not exactly looking at him. And he knows, listen, Baffert knows pedigree. And, if you're looking, he's got to overcome some. I'm not saying he can't go a mile and a quarter, because Spike Sound has already sired mile and a quarter horses. But he's bred for speed, top and bottom.
Yeah.
So I think Baffert realizes that. I don't know if he's a true classic horse. And then why run him against the Dow? Why burst the bubble of one of those two horses? They're both undefeated. So try and keep them undefeated as long as you can. And there's not much else to run in. And he would.
Well, you got the. I no doubt, and he likes that. There's also now, with what's gone on as they wait for the sample split result. There's a matter of getting him a new Grade One. I mean, putting a Grade One back on his resume
exactly.
By splitting them up. That you get that opportunity as well. So, no, it makes perfect sense to take advantage.
There's another horse, by the way, in the wood that might be following the exact same path going Woody Stevens and Haskell, who may be just as fast as Charlotte, and that's Mischievous Alex. He might be going the same way.
That's right. Forgot about him. He's disappeared from the landscape. It's true. He's out of sight, out of mind.
Run him. I mean, I don't think they're going to run him.
You know, absolutely.
I doubt if they'll run him in the Belmont Stakes. And so, I mean, it would be logical to run him at 7 furlongs. He's a proven sprinter. So run him in the Belmont Stakes, and then we could go into Haskell. So I think it'll be. I think that could be quite a showdown between those two horses.
And I'm just, I'm just looking at some of the other names that have sort of, been kind of sidelined to an extent. There'll be some other. I imagine there'll be some of the other winter 3-year-olds that will cut back as well. And turn up there.
Yeah.
In the Woody.
Should probably run Max Player, obviously, at a distance because
he's running. Yeah.
But,
yeah.
He's still basically a one-turn horse right now. So we'll see what happens. And then, Pletcher will probably have 3 in the Belmont. He's got all kinds of horses. He's got horses, that run on close to the lead. He's got horses that run Farmington Road, comes from way out of it. So, if he runs him and he runs Dr. Post, who, we don't know how good he is. He looks like he could be any kind of horse. And Governor Morris, who I still think is a better horse than he's shown. If he just needs a better trip. He doesn't want to run, five lengths off the pace, stuck down on the inside and running between horses and being bottled in the whole way. I just want to see what he does when he gets a clear run on the outside, because he's a grinder, and he just needs to keep going and going. So, so plus he's got 3 interesting horses to run in the Belmont Stakes. And the horse I'm really anxious to see, believe it or not, in there is Sol Vellante, who I rank extremely high. I love this horse, and I know he got beat in the Tampa Bay Derby, but I thought he ran terrific. I mean, that was strictly an experiment, Bianco. He's a European trainer, and he trains European philosophy. And his goal in the Tampa Bay Derby was to give that horse experience in traffic. And he even told the rider, he said to get him in traffic. I want to see what he does. And he got through it, and he closed well. And the other horse, nobody knew how good King Guillermo was. And he was gone by then. And he rallied very strongly to finish second. But I still think back to his Sam Davis. And I just love that horse's stride, his turn of foot. And his pedigree, he'll run 2 miles without taking a deep breath with his pedigree. So I want to see, he'll be at a disadvantage in the Belmont Stakes, so I can certainly overlook a defeat against those kind of horses. But if he's closing in that race, you watch out for him in the Traverse, especially if they run the Traverse at 1.25 miles, and watch out for him in the Derby. I think he's a very good horse. But that's Biancone's philosophy. Trains European style. So, I mean, Belmont's going to be a good race. It even sounds funny just saying the Belmont's going to be a good race. I mean, it's like the race called the Belmont Stakes is going to be a good race. So it just sounds funny to say, because it's so unlike what the Belmont is and represents, or where it's run or how it's run or anything. It's not going to be nothing resembling the Belmont Stakes. No matter what you want to call it, it'll be a terrific race, with or without Maxfield.
Well, and we've got a card for those that haven't had a chance to see the schedule complete or gone back to it after the announcement, came out. I guess it would have been last Monday. Belmont, the Acorn, the Jiper, and the Woody Stevens, 4 grade ones, and then the Pennine Ridge and the Wonder again, the Turf Miles for the 3-year-old. So it really is a heavy 3-year-old day. Only the Jiper expands, you know, beyond into the elders, three and ups. But everything else is 3 year old exclusive. So it really makes for a, you know, nice focus, and it's not so overloaded. Honestly, you know, they ended up doing a nice job spreading out the weekends. I mean, it's going to be a very really look. I'm going to be down there. It looks like the broadcast starting Wednesday, and I'm really
next
looking
Wednesday,
forward to this.
Next Wednesday?
Yeah, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, opening week.
Don't forget the Westchester. If you get Code of Honor in there.
Nice.
Nothing wrong with that. I'm certainly looking for, you know, I think everybody's going to be looking forward to seeing his first start.
Well, they're going to draw, I just got a text on that topic. It's funny that you mentioned that. Let me check my, where is it? It came about an hour ago. Here it is. Attention horsemen, the racing office is taking entries Friday, Saturday, and Sunday for the first 3 days of the meet. So, you know, starting tomorrow, you'll have the opening day, and then Thursday's card and Friday's card, you know, drawn by Sunday, and then we'll go into our normal, draw schedule. And Steve, you mentioned the Westchester. Westchester is opening Saturday with the Carter, as we like to call it, the Andy Serling Carter Handicap. It's Andy's favorite race. It's the race he waits for all year. The Fort Marcy, the Westchester, and the Intercontinental on opening Saturday. And then, you know, one thing, Steve, this is sort of like a Saratoga season, because there's literally a stake every single day of the Belmont stand.
That's great.
Yeah.
But, it's a great lead into to Saratoga. I'm
the Bogey.
Curious to see what they do about Saratoga. I mean,
what do you mean?
You know, if they run
schedule, you mean the way things lay out
with no fans, you know, it's still going to put a major crimp in the town of Saratoga as far as hotels. I'm not going to say restaurants, because, like I said, you can't get into restaurants if you go in February. The place is so packed now. But you got to figure the hotels are going to suffer and the shops are going to suffer.
Well, I'll say this. I think people are still coming to town. To be honest, Steve, there's people that summer here, and they're going to come, and we still don't know. There's every possible effort's going to be made to, you know, kind of do it the way Hong Kong did it, and, you know, allow license holders at some point, and then, you know, perhaps license holders and you know, and a limited lottery, you know, patron thing. They're going to do everything they can, and every window that the state health officials open, NYRA will seize on it, and they want as many people to be able to enjoy the summer as possible. But I still think, even if we end up excluded, you know, as players and fans and stakeholders, there's still going to be people in town, and they're, you know, as restaurant mechanics are, you know, loosened. I keep trying to say to people, where we are on, you know, on May 28th is not where we'll be, you know, in on June 28th and July 15th. I mean, it. You know, you gotta think we're moving in the right direction on the whole.
Well, it's funny when you watch the races on TV and you see the normal shot of the racetrack, everything looks absolutely perfectly normal. And then when you see a shot looking the other way, everything looks so weird. When you see everything looks so desolate when you see that empty grandstand. Yet when you watch it on TV, you can't tell the difference. I mean, it looks absolutely normal. Maybe what NYRA can do, by the way, is have like a lottery, and you have you know, 10 winners, and then if you win, you and four members of your family get an entire section to yourself. So you got a whole section. You can have a whole family spread out in one section, and then you'd be nowhere near anybody else. Each family has their own section. I don't know.
Well, they can limit the number of picnic tables that are scattered in the backyard and have them spread. They can cordon sections of the, you know, they can, you know, there's got to be ways to identify the seating, you know, then count up how many bodies collectively that would represent. And I mean, there's going to be ways to work it. If the casinos, they're working on, you know, these sectioned, you know, poly, you know, whatever, plexiglass, you know, sectioning and so forth, and they're taking machines out, you know, and separating machines and doing all these things to, you know, to allow for, you know, the restrictions to be employed. Then
you could have people,
you know,
in
especially
that new,
good, you know,
whatever they call it, you know, that new section by the clubhouse turn.
Yeah. The 1863.
Right. You just put the, you know, scattered people around in there.
Uh-huh.
In this way, they're isolated because they're behind glass, right? I mean, they're inside.
Well, you're better off, honestly, you're better off outside. I mean, that the one thing we're hearing consistently from, you know, from health officials is that the outdoor setting is far safer than enclosed spaces. So to me, that plays into another benefit of the racetrack, because open air grandstands and backyards and track aprons, I mean, they are, you know, they're outdoors. We play, as you hear so often about the horses and bad weather, we play this game outdoors. That's a positive.
Exactly.
By the way, you're
right about the picnic tables. I mean, you know, you put people back there and you scatter them around, you know, don't have two people, you know, with picnic tables next to each other. There's still plenty of picnic tables out there, and people can still bring folding chairs, and you just have somebody out there monitoring and keep you know, making
yep.
sure people don't get on top of each other. So,
agreed.
Yeah, you could spread people. I mean, that's a big area. You could spread people all over that, you know, the backyard there.
I have no doubt. No doubt. Well, we're looking forward. I think it was over this past week, the last several days, it really started to feel like, you know, I talked to Keith Shamblin yesterday from NTRA, and speaking of Keith and NTRA, you're going to hear today, in fact, the press releases just went out, and you'll see it marketed around the industry and the trade publications. The Jockey Club and Breeders' Cup and NTRA have launched a five-week advertising campaign that is going to be, you know, out in the mainstream. It will not be seen just, you know, on you know, America's Day at the Races and so forth and the NBC coverage. It's going to be spread out into, you know, mainstream entertainment and so forth, and it's kind of exciting. It's the one of the things that people have been saying, you know, we have to do something as an industry to reach out, an outreach thing, and it's a campaign called Still Running Strong, each word a sentence, Still Running Strong, and anxious to
What's
see
the basis of the advertising campaign.
You know, that we're here, we've been here for 200 years, we're not going anywhere, we're a sport that has seen it through this, you know, this difficulty, and by the way, you can bet on it. It's safe, legal, you can, in a matter of moments, open yourself a advanced deposit wagering account and bet. It's a very much a betting outreach, And they want to try to drive people to the ADW platforms and get people involved in the game. It's going to be a 5-week advertising campaign that a lot of industry entities have invested in and contributed to, NTRA and TOBA and more. KTA, Kentucky, and TVG have all contributed along with the Jockey Club and Breeders' Cup. And you know, people say that we haven't done enough. Well, here's an attempt to, you know, take advantage of the eyes we've got on us right now.
And, of course, it's going to be sponsored by Run Happy, right?
Actually, I don't see that. He's the one thing missing here. We would like people to run happily to their computers and bet and sign up. You know, it's funny because Hammer and I, Hammer, he'll tell this story tomorrow. I guarantee it. So I shouldn't really spoil it. But Hammer told me a very interesting story. He was watching the other day. He was painting something in the house. And he sort of literally painted himself into a corner. And the TV was sort of around a wall. And he had been watching the NASCAR qualifying. He had that on. And he was, you know, listening to the qualifying commentary. And then it ended and America's Day at the Races started. And he said he literally had to sit for 50 minutes while the paint was drying, before he could walk on it, or something like this. I mean, the way he explained it.
Where is he now, anyway?
He's at home. He's at home.
Where's that?
In Chatsworth,
oh.
California.
Okay.
I
didn't know if he was still in Arkansas or anything.
Well, no. In fact, he left like 10 days. He slipped out about 10 days early before the meet ended to get home, you know, to be with Gina. But he said something very interesting. He said, you know, he wasn't watching, but he was listening to the play-by-play and the, you know, the back and forth. And, you know, right now it's all Churchill and Twin Spires, you know, getting the showcasing. And I'm sure Naira Betts will get their share once Belmont starts running. But Hammer said that, you know, he heard Twin Spires mentioned half a dozen times. And he said at no point, though, was it explained what Twin Spires necessarily was. And, I mean, for all of us, you know, it's the proverbial preaching to choir, but Hammer said, what about the NASCAR fan that left the TV on like I did and, you know, now, you know, just saw a horse race and you know, thought it was entertaining and is listening and he hears, you know, Twin Spires. Well, what does that mean? He said at no point did anybody say this is an advanced deposit wagering company that an entity that you in 10 minutes can sign up for and you can bet on this upcoming race. You know, that's next. And, you know, he brings up a great point. I mean, people, if we're having an outreach, we have to explain to them the mechanism. I mean, we just can't assume that when they hear the word, you know, when they hear Naira Betts, Twin Spires, et cetera, that they understand what that is. But I mean, you know, explaining that it's not offshore, explaining that it's legal, explaining that, you know, all those kinds of things. Well, it's legal in 37 jurisdictions. You know, then there's those of you that are, you know, living, with every passing day, it seems like we're living in another century. Yeah, I thought he brought up a great point, and it feels like, and it's so funny because Keith and I were talking yesterday, and I discussed this, or he mentioned to me, you know, they're going to launch this advertising campaign tomorrow. You're going to see it, and I said that's so funny because this is exactly what Rick was referring to.
Yeah, I mean, I've got an account at the only one I can get is the
New Jersey Bets.
New Jersey Bets, you know, with the TVG and. I love it. I think it's great. I think they do a great job. It is so easy to bet, so easy to monitor your money, and it's fantastic. Probably too easy to bet, to tell you the truth.
Hmm. Well,
but I mean,
I
yeah, you just go on, yeah, 2 minutes to post, and you, yeah, all of a sudden you just go right on the website and go right in there, place your bet, and it's there, and you got your whole account to see how much you have in there, how much you want to deposit, how much you want to withdraw. And then you withdraw money, you go in a few days, you get a check in the mail, you know, for whatever you withdraw.
Direct deposit.
I think it's great. Like I said, the others can't do it in New Jersey. But, you know, with four, the part of TVG that's called number four New Jersey Bets, to me it's great. If you live in New Jersey and you're looking to bet, that's the place to go.
Well, you got no choice.
No, you don't have to.
It's a monopoly. Yeah, it's a one trick pony. If you're going to play online, that's what you're doing in Jersey. And they've got you can't even sidestep the geo tracking. It's they've managed to outsmart the. It's getting harder, not easier, from on that standpoint. You used to be able to, you know, maybe you had a relative in Connecticut, relative in New York. Pretty funny. Well, and it's also tough, you know. In North Carolina, my buddy Tony, you know, Tony Montanino, he's got to drive to Virginia to make a bet. It's ridiculous. The people in Georgia, come on. This is just.
Listen, I know what it's like. I mean, in the past, if I wanted to make a bet, I'd have to drive either to Freehold Raceway or Philadelphia Park.
Yep.
I mean, I had no other place to bet. Absolutely none. And I used to drive to Freehold all the time, sometimes just to watch races. Because you couldn't even see them. If there was like an allowance race at Gulfstream Park, you know, we're talking obviously before TVG, but, you know, if there was like, if I was doing, you know, a Derby Dozen or Derby Watch or whatever I was doing at the time, and there was like some really good allowance races at Gulfstream or something like that, I'd have to drive 40 minutes to Freehold, watch the race, and get back in the car and drive home.
Hmm.
So it just shows you how far we've come in all aspects of
no doubt
watching horse races.
Well, and it's funny you said something.
The days where there wasn't even a replay. You saw it once through your binoculars, and that's the last time you ever saw the race.
Unless there was a newsreel.
Right, exactly. They're narrated by Chris Schenkel or something.
You said something funny about the convenience factor, and I took a long time when I moved from Montreal to Greenwich. You know, and it's 21 years I've been here, and I had the opportunity to open an account, and I hesitated. It took me, I bet you, I didn't open an account online for 2 or 3 years after I moved, because I didn't want it so convenient. And I, you know, in Montreal, I would go to Hippodrome Blue Bonnets, or I'd go to one of the Hippo clubs, usually at Place Bonaventure. And you know, it was within, you know, walking distance, the Hippo club. But I would just go to Saratoga Harness, you know, I'd go to the raceway to make a play. And I didn't want it to be at my fingertips, and then
right.
I did.
That's why I said. I don't know if it's a good thing or not, because it's so easy to make a bet. But the one thing about having an account is that if you make the bet and you lose, it's no big deal. It's like, because you're not losing. Yeah, I didn't put any money up. And the worst thing is to be sitting there watching a horse race and loving a horse and not being able to do anything about it.
Yeah.
So here it is right at your fingertips. So, you know, if I bet and I lose, that's, to me, much, much better than not being able to bet and have your horse win. You know, that's
true. That's very true.
Say, wow, this, I can't believe this horse is 30-1. I can't do anything about it. I'm sitting here. you know, with absolutely nothing to do about it. I can't. You know how I used to bet the Triple Crown races? A coworker of Jones at the State House would go to Philadelphia Park on Friday, and I would write down my bets on a piece of paper and give him the money, and he would make the bets. That's the way I was betting the Triple Crown. It's either that or go to Freehold or go to Philadelphia Park myself. But right now, anytime I'm watching a race, I say, "Oh God, I love this horse." And what do you do? Beep, 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 boom, press a button, and you're in. And all of a sudden, you get this feeling of just you feel so much
exactly.
There's, you know, I've got it in.
There's nothing like it.
It's a big deal. I didn't lose any money. I lost a number on my account.
Well, occasionally you'd pick up the phone and I'd hear from you, and you'd say, "Do me a favor."
Yeah, right. That showed you how desperate I was. I would try and call somebody and say, you know, if you
can you get down?
But you don't want to do that. I mean, that's
it's all right. Nobody minds doing that.
Because then all of a sudden, then you forget and you feel like an idiot. You say, "Oh God, I didn't pay him back." And you have a tendency to do that. I mean, I still owe you you and Tina a dinner at Saratoga.
Not at all, and don't ever worry about asking people to make those bets for you, Steve, because most of them are cuffing your bet anyway. They're you know.
I don't blame them. I'll never forget, by the way, I was at a racetrack with a guy who I worked with, my really good buddy, Jack, and it was the day of Seattle Slough's Belmont Stakes, trying for the Triple Crown, and they ran the Mother Goose, and we had a contest in the office called Broken Downs, where it would run the whole year, and if you won, you won like hundreds and hundreds of dollars, because you just pick stakes races. And you go through the whole year, and if you won like $700-$800, and you'd get a free sketch from Pep of you, and it was a big deal. It was really a big deal. So we were going that day, and one of the handicappers, this guy Nick Sinabria, told my friend Jack to put down a bet on him in the Mother Goose. It was run the same day on an Elmendorf filly named Road Princess, and my friend's looking at her over and over again, and she's like 40-1. And he's saying, she has no shot. She had an outside post. She had no shot. He just didn't like her at all. He's saying, "Should I book this? Should I book this?" And he went on and on whether we should book it or not. And finally he said, "You know what? This filly's not going to win." And so not only does Road Princess win and pay like $80-something that he has to owe him, but the other guy had him in Broken Downs, too, and went ahead of him in Broken Downs. I would never do that, no matter who the horse is. I would never book a bet.
Well, you hit with me with something nice once, I forget, for a couple hundred. And I'm trying to remember what it was.
I wish I could remember who it was.
It was a good one. It was a good one. I think I mailed you a check, or whenever. No, maybe I, by the time we got to Belmont, I think it was somewhere along the line. And now I'm drawing a. I got to think about that. You're usually good with that kind of stuff.
Sure,
to remember. Yeah. You had a nice one. You said, $10 the win place or whatever it was.
I think it makes me feel good.
Yeah.
That I had a win or whoever it was.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Steve, I'm going to pull up and I got to get Rich Eng in here. And Santa Anita picks back up tomorrow and we'll catch up with Rich. But this was a fun hour. And we'll talk next week. Santa Anita Derby preview. And I'll be coming to you from Belmont Park, I believe.
All right. Have fun. That'll be interesting. It'll be interesting out there, that's for sure.
Well, it's funny. For me, it's not going to be that much of a different experience because I'm there, 9 to noon in the mornings, and there's nobody really in the building yet anyway. So for me, it's not going to feel different.
That is true.
other than that, I'm looking forward. Believe
me.
Would
you have access to the trainers or anybody out there in the morning?
The guys that come over, by the Belmont Cafe and that come over to the main track. Barkley always comes over in the mornings. He's there. Christoph circles, Shuggy, Jimmy Toner.
They hang out right by you anyway.
Yeah, yeah. Shug sits on a bench and holds court.
Right, yeah, right. He's there, and Chris is always right along the rail there. The horses coming in because he always parades his horses in the paddock, so he's always he always stands right there. So he's right near you too. But yeah, that'll be fun. It'll give you a sense of normalcy.
Yeah, big time. It's been so. I mean, I've had no issue with this. With the way this thing is unfolded, I mean, in terms of what we have to do, in terms of staying home. But I will acknowledge that at a period when I am invariably at the busiest and on the move, March, April into May, and through Belmont, it's just been so. To be this sedentary is a new experience, and not a good one. I don't need to be sedentary.
You're traveling so much.
Yeah, yeah. So
yeah, you'd be in Florida, you'd be at Gulfstream, you'd be at Oaklawn, you'd be at Fairgrounds.
Yeah, I know. We missed that. Well, HBPA convention. Luckily we got Vegas. We got Vegas in, and we had Jay suggested a coming to Santa Anita right before that. That proved to be a good move, and it's funny. I don't know if anybody noticed the. I think it was might have been Tom Quigley that retweeted it, and I forgot to ask Keith Shamblin about this. They apparently Bally's among the Caesar properties, and Caesar's is in the process of being sold. Among the Caesar properties, apparently Bally's will be the last of them to open. They're reopening them in a, they've got a plan, and I don't know how that. Well, Rich Eng is joining us, so Rich Eng will answer these questions.
Okay.
Oh, it's terrible. I mean, what about the convention? I asked Rich last week. I said, what about the conventioneers? How do you? What's going to happen? It's unbelievable.
Yeah, they're doing everything they can to try and lure people out there.
Yeah,
the whole city is just in bad shape. The hotels are getting absolutely killed.
Yeah. Well, and other than being able to do maintenance that has been put off for one reason or another, I mean that's probably the only. Probably the only benefit, but they're the real, real uncertainty. Casey telling me that Rich forgot it was Thursday, which is not an unusual circumstance for people this year, under these settings. But he was out walking the dog. He's got that. They got like a Shih Tzu or a Lhasa Apso or a. Pekingese.
I don't want to hog into Rich's time like
no, he needed time. He needed a couple of minutes. He's got to he's going to have to turn the dog over to Sandy or do something. pretty funny. Steve, thanks a lot. This was tremendous.
Okay, Steve, you take care. Have a good time at Belmont.
Steve. No, I'll be talking to you from there. Rich Eng is going to join us, and Rich was out walking the dog. What is that little dog's name?
It's a Yorkie, a little girl named Lily.
Lily, that's right. You've said it before, and Yorkie. I knew it was something, that could fit in the pocket.
Yeah, we're smitten with the Yorkie breed. We like little Yorkies.
Nice. How many have you had?
Well, we've had three of them, and unfortunately, dogs have a lifespan not as long as ours. So But we try to pick up ones that have been left. We pick them up from a dog. So
nice.
We try to find a home for a nice dog.
You don't call each of them Lily, do you?
That is a great question because that is correct. We have called all three of the Yorkies Lily.
Oh my God, that's great! That's
great. It's like the story with George Foreman. Didn't George name all his sons George?
Yes, George the first, George the second, George the third. So, like Lassie.
Yeah.
What's that, Lassie? You're 47? And Jimmy is still in that goddamn well. I'm sorry. I knew you were going to say yes. That they've all been Lily. Unbelievable. Rich, let's get a Vegas update. I'm sorry. You sent me over the edge. this is very funny. Couple of things. Get everybody up to date on the Vegas situation. I mean, the reports are fascinating, and also obviously, it's an unnerving time for everybody, but it looks like things are inching toward, operational. What do we need to know?
Well, what was interesting was at the start of the week, there was a meeting with the Gaming Control Board, where basically the casino companies handed into the Gaming Control Board the protocols that they were doing for health and safety reasons for the employees and for the customers, and that was being reviewed. And then there was supposed to be a press conference Tuesday afternoon, late afternoon, with Governor Steve Sisolak, and he had to cancel the press conference because I guess either that day or the day before he had come in contact with someone who was positive with the coronavirus, so he was self-quarantining himself. So he had to cancel the press conference. But then on Wednesday morning, he did have his office issue a press release, and they did put out information that June 4th was going to be the target date for casinos that want to reopen, that can't, are going to be allowed to reopen. So now we've got a starting line, and we've got, in quote, not a finish line, but we've got a target date to get these casinos open, which is June 4th. But I know from, my contacts with casino executives, because obviously I'm keeping track of everything as the head of the racing forum here in Nevada, they have been working on the protocols, obviously, for weeks already to adjust the table games, to adjust the slot machines, to adjust the racing sports books, the restaurants. I mean, customer training as far as wearing face masks and gloves and things like that, how to handle the chips and the money, the cards, dice, so on and so forth. So they've been working on it for a while. So it's not like they just started these procedures on Tuesday to start working on them. They've been working on them for weeks.
Well, we've heard too. I see the images of the plexi separators for people at sitting at tables, and the sort of sneeze guard wraparound for the dealer. I've heard our friend Vince, commonly known as Vince the Stevedore, his buddy is with his brother, I think, is worth not his buddy, but his brother is with a technical maintenance team that manages the slot machines, and they've been taking them out of so that there's space between for players that are sitting and all the things that are involved. What about the sports books? How are the sports books handling it? They must be cordoning things off in the corrals.
Yeah, well, the one thing they're going to do is people can only sit every other spot. So, in other words, there used to be the work booths where the players would sit side by side, kind of like in a library. But now they're going to eliminate chairs so that it's only every other seat that the people are going to be allowed to sit in. And I have not heard, though, if they were going to build, like, plexiglass, you know, like you see in some of the banks between the customer and the actual ticket writer. So I haven't heard confirm if that's actually going to be in place. But regardless, I know the employees are going to all be wearing face masks and gloves when they're handling the money and the tickets and things like that. So, you know, all that work is moving forward, and I'm working on June 4th as a target date to get all of the daily racing form materials ready. And it's exciting to actually have a go sign and be back in business again.
Well, Rich, back in business as well, handicapping the cards at Santa Anita at RaceDayLasVegas.com for Rich's analysis. And, of course, they'll resume tomorrow. In fact, I took a I printed out the Friday card, and not the whole card, just the quick sheet. You got a first-level allowance feature. Tomorrow, Michael McCarthy with Lofty. That nice. It's a small group of five, but it's a quality group. What have you been handling, Rich? You got a simulcast idea for today? We got maybe Churchill.
Yeah, actually, I do. If your listeners remember from last Thursday, actually, I went 2 for 2.
Absolutely.
The two horses I gave out both won, and it was one of those things where they won from here to there, which is always fun to see. There was no sweating out a photo finish or anything like that. They just went out and got their business done. As far as a couple of horses today, let's see. We'll go to the first race today, and the first race is for $50,000 claimers, non-winners of two. And the horse that I'm going to go with is number 6, And Seek. This is a 3-to-1 shot with Dale Romans, his horse coming in from Gulfstream Park. Certainly Dale is one of the all-time leading trainers of Churchill Downs. So going back,
he's
to
the Louisville, leading trainer.
Yeah, and it's going home for him. And I remember my days at Turfway Park, I was very familiar with his father, Jerry Romans, who won a lot of races at Turfway and formerly Latonia, and got to know Dale, a younger Dale. But back in those days, but you could tell he had the pedigree to be an outstanding horseman. So Antique is a horse that I like as far as this position. Should get a nice stalking trip. Joe Talamo's had been a tremendous success story at Oaklawn Park, and he's continuing. He should be able to continue with success at Churchill Downs too, even though it's kind of a crowded jockey's room right now. But that'll ease itself a little bit when Belmont Park opens on June 3rd. And some of the fellas head that way. As far as the second horse, I'm going to actually go to another Talamo horse, but I know sometimes you don't argue with price. You just use a horse like as a pre-bingo square or a single. But in race number 5, the number 1 horse, Heaven's Whisper, looks to lay all over this field. Probably would be a very short-priced horse, but as I say, it might be a single in your verticals, and it might be a single in your horizontals. But Joe Talamo, again, I guess I'll be a Joe Talamo fan. I always am, but I'll see if he can get a couple of done for us here at the races.
I like them both, actually. I like both those tabs. Heaven's Whisper looks super tough, but Antique, I think 3-to-1, right? 3-to-1 co-second choice, and I agree. I thought Antique looked good. I do want to alert people on this card today. I did not get a chance to write things up, but be aware, Morticia comes back, which is a little bit of a surprise. I would have thought that Watts Humphrey, would have bred her, especially after this extended delay. But Morticia makes her 6-year-old debut today, and of course the multi graded stake winner, over $1 million in earnings. Great to have her back for another season. Actually, the Kleins have got Play On back in this spot too. This is a good race. I mean, those two.
And also, if I could move forward to race number 8, this won't be a play for the record, but a horse that I've been keeping my eye on all winter in race 8, number 1, Portos. I've been following this horse. And I think this horse that stubbed his toe in the Louisiana Derby. But I'm not giving up on a horse like this. This horse, I believe, has a lot of talent. And this would be a good spot for a confidence builder back in the allowance condition, the 1, Portos, in race 8.
Yeah, and not the favorite. 4-1. Dukes Up is 7-2. And you've also got Paul Pomp has got that silver ratio on the outside. This is a good race. Sprawl from Mott and Claiborne. And this is Dilschneider. Unshaken. Get first start for Stidham, for Godolphin, taking over from Kieran. This is a good group. It's a decent card. Rich, I appreciate it. Stay safe. And we will talk next week. Rich Eng, everybody. RaceDayLasVegas.com for Rich's analysis daily of Southern California. Want to thank Tim Keefe and Dick Powell from early this morning, and Tony, Steve Haskin, and Rich just now. Good luck if you're playing today, everybody. Weekend preview at the races tomorrow. Jay Privman will be back, and Marty McGee, and we'll probably have a America's Day at the Races guest as well. Rich Migliori on the show this week. Look forward to that, too. Thanks, everybody. Talk to you in the morning.
The latest racing news. It's at the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
If you are racing two-year-olds in California, Kentucky, please consider Bleeder Shield. The leading all-natural paste used to greatly reduce or eliminate EIPH. The list of trainers who trust Bleeder Shield is endless. Shouldn't you join the team? To learn more, contact Joseph Vellante at 215-501-6880.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Here in Pennsylvania, we have the best breeding program in the country, thanks in part to our Racehorse Development Trust Fund. It's a trust, it's not tax dollars, and by law, our fund is completely protected. These are difficult days for all of us. When life in America gets back to normal, and it will, our PA breeding program will be here, stronger and better than ever. To learn more about how we're protecting the trust, go to PABred.com to watch a short video.
How's it going, Sue?
Hey!
Have you seen this commercial?
What career track are you on?
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck.
Isn't that the horse racing school that Bob Baffert went to?
Yeah, Todd Fletcher, too, and lots of other major players in every area of the industry.
Really? Like what?
Well, for starters, we have graduates who are executives at Churchill Downs, NYRA, Darley America, Gulfstream, Keeneland, you name it. They're also regulators, racing officials, bloodstock agents, track announcers. My class had a job placement rate of almost 90%.
Wow, what other college program has results like that?
What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.